Who knows?
Good morning, and welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Stu Nicholson. I'll be subbing for Ann Fisher for the next couple of days. Columbus and Ohio in general is home to a growing number of microbreweries that brew so-called craft beers, ales, stouts, and such. More recently, Columbus has seen the startup of micro-distilleries producing craft-made gins, vodkas, whiskeys. Business is good and is drawing the attention of beer and spirits aficionados and even tourists. But until a couple of weeks ago, Ohio law did not allow you to walk in and actually buy a bottle of the product directly from most of these small microbrewers or distillers, or go in and get a sample, a taste, you know, to see if you even liked it enough to buy it. That changed with the passage of House Bill 243 by the Ohio General Assembly. It was signed into law by Governor Kasich. The new law went into effect on March 22nd. So what impact will this have on the growing niche of brewers and spirit makers? And why did the law need to be changed in the first place? We have a number of guests for this hour addressing these and other questions this morning, including some local brewers and distillers themselves. But first, let's get some background on the law change and why it was changed from our first guest. And our first guest is David Goodman, the director of the Ohio Department of Commerce and a former two-term state senator. So he's certainly had the experience on the legislative side. Director Goodman, welcome to All Sides.
Good to be here.
Great to have you on the show. Great to have you on the show. Brewing and distilling isn't new in Ohio. I mean, if you go back into Ohio history, the brewing industry was very big. We also had a number of distillers, as I've read up on. But Prohibition, of course, back in the 1920s, kind of brought a halt to all of that. And even after Prohibition was repealed, the brewing industry came back, sort of, but the distillery business really didn't come back, and it really didn't start to until recently.
At least not in Ohio. It's an interesting history. After Prohibition, one of the problems that they wanted to address in a new environment was the vertical monopoly, having somebody who can manufacture, wholesale, and distribute all within the same company. It was one of the problems that existed before. It brought up a lot of corruption, so we created, and every state in some form or another has a three-tier system, which means that if you are selling intoxicating liquors, beer, wine, you cannot manufacture or be the wholesaler or be the retail all at once. It's interesting history there is, folks have used the term lock, stock, and barrel, but they don't necessarily know what that means. Lock, stock, and barrel means it's somebody who owns a vertical monopoly. You own the the lock, which is the retail, the stock, which is the wholesale, and the barrel, which is the manufacturing. Anyway, the residual effect of that meant that if you had a distillery, you couldn't sell it at retail. You would have to go through a wholesale distributor and then separate that out with your retailer. And that meant that distillers and brewers in the state of Ohio could not also sell at retail. We have changed that for microbrewers and micro distillers in this past year, and we're very excited about the opportunity. This is a growing business. It's a small business opportunity. It's going to help create jobs, and that's what this administration is all about: job creation and helping folks be able to take care of themselves and their families, and create jobs for folks in their community. And so, we're seeing a significant trend nationally in microbrewers. I mean, for instance, in the past 3 years, you saw 9% growth in 2009, 12% growth in 2010, and so far this year, a 15% growth in microbrewers. In Ohio, that means we've gone from 44 to 70 of them. We have made basically a really common sense change in saying that if you are a microbrewery, you should be able to sell to a limited effect your product to customers who come on premises. Same thing with micro distilleries.
Mm-hmm. How big of a business is this in Ohio in terms of dollars and cents? What kind of, give people a sense for how big this is?
Well, I can tell you that in 2007 we had 44 micro This year we have 70, and it is growing. I can't give you the specific dollars and cents of that because I don't have that right now. Micro distilleries, we've only allowed 3 in the state. We had a law in effect that said if you were a micro distillery and you wanted to sell on premises, we only had 3 licenses. You could have one in each county that had over 800,000 people, which would have just been Hamilton County, Franklin County, and Cuyahoga County. The law that we just passed in House Bill 243 takes the cap off of that and says that anybody that would like to have this license simply just applies for it, pays $2 per barrel, and they can go into business.
Department of Commerce also manages travel and tourism for the state of Ohio. What does this law change mean in that respect, in terms of being able to attract travel and tourism dollars into the state?
I can tell you that the Department of Commerce, we do many, many things, but we do not, we're not involved with travel and tourism, although, you know, we would like to have the effect of making some changes in the laws as it applies to the regulation of business in the state of Ohio to make it much more inviting for folks to come to Ohio. And we do think definitely that this, creating microbreweries and the creation of microbreweries and micro distilleries throughout Ohio is one of those ways where we can get folks to come in and sample what's great about Ohio. I mean, we're a very large agricultural state, and locally produced products, locally produced ingredients are essential to that niche market that folks definitely are interested in when it comes to coming to Ohio and getting a taste of who we are and what we're about.
How does this trickle down? Because obviously you distill or brew from something, usually grains or something that can be distilled or brewed down. But how does that trickle down to the agricultural community in Ohio?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, for instance, we have a lot of wine producers in the state. And you know, if you get over 21% alcohol content, you become a spiritus liquor, and that's regulated in a different way. And a lot of our wineries, for instance, would like to be able to sell grappa or higher alcohol content wines, and I guess what we would call spiritus liquors, but have not been able to do so. So now they can also add those products to their repertoire and be able to sell that. Folks, you know, there's just a growing trend of folks out there who have more discerning tastes, who would like to sample more locally grown organic products, and this is the way that they can do that in Ohio.
How will Ohio compare with other states? I mean, when I think of distilleries especially distilleries, I'm thinking Kentucky, Tennessee, places like that. How do you think what kind of competitive shape is this going to put Ohio in that regard?
Well, I think it puts us on the playing field, and I think that's a tremendous thing. The reason why you think of Kentucky is because they're famous for their bourbons. We have a burgeoning opportunity here to create an identity of our own. And it's just something that hasn't yet occurred. We had laws that prohibited that kind of opportunity, and now we don't. So it'll be fun to see how this all shakes out and what kind of unique characteristic we can create that would make Ohio and put Ohio on the map and competitive with Kentucky and its bourbon trail. Who knows what will happen?
It's almost too bad that Kentucky and OSU couldn't have met in the NCAA finals. We could have had an interesting bet on there.
Well, so. it's more depressing in more ways than that. Boy, oh boy.
Anyways, I'm curious, and again, going back to the fact that you were formerly a 2-term state senator. What going back over the way this bill passed through the General Assembly, was there any opposition to this? I've got to believe there may have been, but what did you see during the legislative discussion before this bill was passed?
Actually, this was now I would have to say that there were a number of usually when you get a liquor bill going through the legislature, a lot of folks like to add different things to it, and sometimes there can be controversial aspects to that. These issues, these specific issues as it applies to the new licenses that allow for small business growth in the state of Ohio and the brewery, and the microbrewery and the micro distillery area, were non-controversial and widely supported by the legislature. And that's because it makes sense. But I do understand, you know, for instance, at the Department of Commerce, we run liquor control and we run the state's spirituous liquor wholesale business. And, you know, we're proud of the fact that Ohio is the fifth lowest consumer of spirits per capita in the country. That's because we are very, very sensitive to our responsibility to, you know, make sure that Ohioans are drinking responsibly. And at the same time, we are also in the wholesale spirituous liquor business. So I guess you might say we have a dual responsibility that may, in some sense, be conflicting. But it's worked in Ohio for a long time. This opportunity simply made sense. We have folks that are in the microbrewery business that it just simply didn't make sense that they were producing a very fine product but couldn't sell it in their own premises. You're going to talk to some folks, I think, after me who are burgeoning brand new producers of spirits at Watershed, and you know, they would have tours on premises where they would have people coming in who wanted to see how their product was made, and yet when they finished learning all about it, they'd have to go a mile away to the nearest liquor store to be able to sample or purchase that product. That just simply doesn't make sense. So, you know, you tell that story to legislators and they understand it, and you know, this is all part of, for instance, the Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor's Common Sense Initiative. We're trying to get rid of burdensome regulations and rules that don't make sense in the state of Ohio, and this one fits clearly into that category, and we're very proud that not only does this did we get rid of this nonsensical regulation, but that this will also help local businesses, small businesses grow in the state of Ohio and help create jobs, which is really what we're all about.
Yeah, it really does seem to make a lot of common sense, because it's a little like being able to go into a Starbucks to buy coffee but not get a chance to give it a taste and see if you actually blend.
You can go into the Starbucks, you can watch them make the coffee and figure out how it's all done.
Yep.
But then you'd have to go somewhere else to actually buy it and taste it. That makes no sense.
You'd have to go to the middleman instead of getting it from the source.
That's right. But I mean, like I said, from the beginning, it has to do with the history of being part of a control state where you have a separation between the aspects of the sale, and so we're moving in another direction, but in a very controlled way to make sure we don't have the problems that we had in the past.
Well, Director Goodman, we want to thank you very much for joining us on the show today. It's really been enlightening to kind of get the background on this law change and some of the reasons and some of the things that are going to be the expectations that we have for growing the business and certainly growing jobs. And thank you again for joining us.
We're excited about it. I mean, like I said, it's all about job creation in the state of Ohio, helping entrepreneurs get an opportunity to take care of themselves and their families and grow a business and grow jobs.
Great. Director Goodman, thank you very much. That was Director Goodman from the Ohio Department of Commerce. We're going to take a break here in a little bit, but if you've got a call, a question, or comment that you'd like to make, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm Stu Nicholson, pinch hitting for Ann Fisher on All Sides, and we'll be back in a little bit.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. Behind the news, there are real people with something to say. We bring them to you. Roundtable conversations with coal miners, the out-of-work soldiers, their families, and more. Honest conversations about the issues with the people who live their reality. It's fresh perspective you won't hear anywhere else. Join us for the next On Point.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 47 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly cloudy skies today and a high near 62. Clouds for tonight, a low right around 43 degrees. Partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow. A warmer day with a high of 75.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. Details at themontgomerysolution.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
We're talking about the growth of microbrewing and microdistilling in Ohio and a new state law that may help change both the business for both business owners and consumers. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and I'm Stu Nicholson, substituting for Ann this morning and for the next couple of mornings. Brewing beer and distilling spirits is indeed a growing business, and if you ask the suppliers from the agribusiness community, it's certainly growing is an apt term. Permits for new breweries rose from 50 in 2009 to 65 last year, according to the Ohio Department of Commerce, and permits issued for distilleries rose from just 4 in 2009 to 12 in 2011. And joining us are two representatives of the burgeoning micro-distillery business, Greg Lehman and Dave Rigo. They are the owners of Watershed Distillery. And gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us in.
Yeah, and no samples? I mean, the law changed, you know, so
sure.
Any rate.
Next time.
Oh, yeah. Tell us a little bit about how you got started. I was kind of reading through your bio sketches, you know, and preparing for the show, but tell us, you know, you both came from non-distilling backgrounds, really, and tell us how that all got started.
Sure. No big family history at all. You know, I think we both really enjoyed local products. We both worked for big corporations for a number of years out of college. And really kind of decided we wanted to do something in our hometown, Columbus, and wanted to bring a cool new local product to Columbus. I liked cooking quite a bit. I think Greg over here enjoyed the microbrewing industry. But we wanted to do something just a little bit different. Didn't know if distilling was even possible in Ohio because of all the laws, but kind of just realized that we wanted to maybe try it. So we looked into the law, realized that we could actually do it if we got the proper permitting, and went about it and gained some investors, wrote a business plan, and kind of went from there.
Was there any time, I guess, where you just said, oh my gosh, what have we gotten ourselves into?
Yeah, for me there was.
Still have those times, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We had our day jobs while we started, and it was we came up with the idea but still working our day jobs and started working on it at night to learn how to distill and to write the business plan. But the whole time, you know, we're working our day jobs, and it's just kind of this hobby almost. And then it became more intense, and then we had this nice business plan, and we presented it to potential investors. And I think once they started putting money in and the bank account got to the point where the business plan said it needed to be, that was the point where it was like, oh man, now we either got to do this or not do this. And if we do this, we leave our day jobs at some point in the near future and make it go.
Just for our listeners' information, what was your day job before you started this?
I worked for Pfizer and sold some of their products in the animal health side.
Uh-huh. And I worked for Ferguson Enterprises selling plumbing supplies.
Sure. Plumbing.
Toilets and pigs.
That's what it is. And agribusiness. Yeah, there's a distant connection there, I
sure.
guess. So, describe the business before the law changed. I mean, you obviously started, you know, you didn't just come up with this on the 22nd of March and say, all right, hey, it's time to go. But describe what it was like right. before this law changed, and typically, you know, as Director Goodman was talking earlier, you know, people might come by and visit and go through your operation, but you really couldn't even so much as give them a taste of the product.
We started selling our products late 2010, December 2010. Mm-hmm. So we had about a year and a few months before this law came into play that we had to figure out how do we sell around this, you know, and we went
and
just
real
typical.
Real quick, sell around it, meaning go to the other liquor stores and get people to buy product, not sell product out of our place around the law.
Sure.
And I'm sure that probably meant having to go to these liquor stores and say, hey, we've got a good product, and they're going,
absolutely.
Okay,
yeah,
prove
absolutely.
It to me.
Yeah, we focused our energy a lot on bars and restaurants and going to liquor stores, forming relationships with those people also, and selling through those avenues. But we gave through that year and 2 or 3 months before this, we gave probably 3,000-4,000 tours to people at our facility that we had to direct somewhere else to go and make the purchase.
And again, we're talking here on all sides about some changes in the Ohio law that deal with microbreweries and microdistilleries. If you've got a comment or a question, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How did the law as it existed prior to March 22nd, did that put you at a competitive disadvantage?
Yeah, I think the way to put it in perspective, people want to come through the distillery. They want to tour. They want to see what we're doing. And if we take last Saturday as a good example, this is after the law's gone in place. I did a tour with a group of people, and before the law was in place, we would have made about $100 off the people just paying to come on tour. And after the law goes in place, we made over $700 because we were able to sell product to those people as they were leaving. Now, what we couldn't measure before was we made $100. We don't know how many of those people went down the road and bought a bottle, but by our estimation, it was a pretty low number that actually went and mm-hmm. bought a bottle that day.
So what does this new law change for you? I mean, clearly it's already starting to have an impact. So
it changes. When people come in, they can buy a taste of our gin. They can buy a taste of our vodka. There's very limited on what they can buy, but they can actually taste the product, which is huge for us. And then they can, if they like it and they like what we're all about, they can purchase a bottle of gin, a bottle of vodka, if they would like to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and the difference too, before the law went into place, is when they came in to do a tasting, it had to be a private tasting, and we actually had to schedule that with the state 5 days in advance. So now anybody that comes in off the street can just come in and buy a small sampling to see if they like it before they make the purchase of a bottle, mm-hmm. and we don't have to pre-register that or anything.
A lot less cumbersome.
Yeah, a lot less cumbersome.
Sure. I'm sure Director Goodman at the Department of Commerce is grinning ear to ear right now with that revelation too.
Because
certainly it does make it a lot easier from a business standpoint. And I'll throw a question at you that I threw at him. You know, when I think distilleries, when I think, I'm thinking, in the United States at least, Kentucky, Tennessee,
sure.
places like that. Well, you know, when I think vodka, I'm thinking, Poland, Russia, places like that. Gin, the rather snobbish British,
England, right?
British brands. What is it like for you having to get people to realize that, hey, we've got a good product here, and it's competitive with what you're going to find everywhere else?
It's been a lot of hard work, and you have to get it in front of people. But with the local movement that's really going on right now, it's been actually somewhat easy as far as once you get it in front of those people, they realize that, hey, it's made here. It's made from local grains. It's made from, people that are here locally. Why would we ever want to send a couple more dollars overseas when we can keep the couple dollars here? Mm-hmm. That's our argument every time we go into a restaurant that is pouring Grey Goose or Kettle One or something like that. Hey, pour Watershed. It's basically the same price, and you're more likely to have those couple dollars come back into your restaurant if you keep it local.
And you're networking out among these sources for the grains and whatnot that you use.
Yeah. The majority of our grains come from two different places: Athens, a place called Shagbark, mm-hmm. and then up in Millersburg, a place called Stutzman Farms.
Mm-hmm. So. Got a couple of callers on the line. Adam from Columbus, who says he's a retailer of liquor. Adam, you've got a question for our guests?
Well, I don't have a question, but hey, guys, it's
I thought it might be you.
How you doing?
A known conspirator.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I just wanted to point out, like, the controlled state of Ohio in general, and how, you know, David Goodman was talking about how, you know, it's all about creating jobs and such. But with having the controlled state that we have, you know, enough Bacardi and Jack Daniels brands. There's other people, there's a lot of people, I should say, that come to our store and know about other brands like Watershed and Ohio and other things from other states that they can't get here, and they're actually going and buying it online. They're crossing the borders into Indiana, Kentucky, and getting these products and just, you know, basically giving their tax dollars to other states because we have a controlled state that, you know, has... they're almost controlled by Jack Daniels and Bacardi. I mean, that's going a little too far, but and then you have all these bars and restaurants that want to be able to provide this stuff that their customers want, and they put themselves at risk to have these, you know, special unique products underneath their bar because it's not on a state list. It's just a real unfortunate scenario. And in general, liquor here in Ohio is unfortunate. You have these liquor stores that are they're not good places to be. Nobody makes money off of this, so you don't have knowledgeable people, friendly people working the retail side of it.
It sounds like we've got a ways to go in terms of things that need to be dealt with from a legal standpoint.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The easiest thing would just be a free state. And, I mean, even there's distilleries within Ohio that don't even want to sell at state stores in Ohio. There's, like, Woodstone Creek in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They have a number. They make a lot of different brands, and only... like two or three of them are actually available on the state list here.
Yeah. Adam, I'm going to interrupt you real quickly here because I really want to kind of get a reaction from Dave and Greg here. Okay, so we'll put you on hold here real quick. Dave, Greg, what reaction do you have to that?
Adam brings up some good points, and it's not perfect here. I guess we'd both agree with that. This HB 243 that went through, for Dave and I, we took it as a real positive. The way Division of Liquor Control, the way they worked down downtown Columbus to get this bill through, and there was support from both sides, the support from Director Goodman. It's been amazing to see that support. And so we're excited not only that this went through, but just about working on some other issues, some other low-hanging fruit that we think would make common sense to change at some point in the future. So, yeah, I think there's still some things that could be changed that, from our perspective, seems easy to do. It might not be, but it looks like the people are willing to help if it makes sense.
Did you all testify when this law was going through the General Assembly? Or?
Amazingly, we did not. We weren't or asked to testify. The couple people that testified, the majority of them actually didn't even have distilleries yet. They were looking to get distilleries or were wineries that wanted a distilling license also. So we actually found out about the first hearing that morning. So we hurried down there and listened to it, but we didn't testify ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier in terms of the kind of locavore aspect to this, you know, being able to market as being, hey, we buy our grains from Ohio based, you know, farming operations. There's a certain cool factor, if you will, that seems to be attached to microbreweries, micro distilleries. How did that? I mean, do you sense that as well in terms, and how did that impact? You know, how did you use that? I guess in terms of your marketing efforts.
I think we sensed that cool factor, and knowing that we weren't cool, that's why we joined and started the distillery, just to try to jump on board. I think that's helped us along the way. Being serious, when we presented our business plan to investors, even way back then, and we had pictures of the equipment, the still, the mash tun, the fermenters, there's definitely something attractive about that business, and investors wanted to be a part of it. Even with our business plan, our lackluster business plan, they still put money in. And I think the same goes for when you walk into a bar or restaurant and you tell somebody, hey, we're making this right down the road. Do you want to come see the distillery? They get excited about it. There's something intriguing there.
Yeah, and I think it fits with the business plan. I mean, we're asking people to get on board because we make it locally here. So let's try to support local companies in what we buy also. We're trying like heck to not just the grain side of it. I mean, we get our cardboard boxes from a company in Mount Vernon. We're really looking to see if we can somehow justify buying glass here in Ohio. There's a big company called Anchor Glass that we'd love to work with.
I've heard the name.
Unfortunately.
If you're listening,
yeah,
lower the quantity just a little bit.
They want us to buy 100,000 bottles at a time, which at this point we can't do. But, there's all those types of things that we'd like to do in the future as well.
Do you see, in that respect, in terms of do you see yourself working in concert with other micro distillers in the state as they come about to maybe go to an Anchor Hocking and say, hey, look, we've got a consortium, we've got an association, we'd like to, we can't buy individually and meet what you require, but as a group we can?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be really cool. We're looking at trying to get a guild put together, and I'll be honest, we haven't taken the lead on that. Guys across town are, but I think our first meeting to get things really moving is going to be at the end of April. So if we had a distillers guild, that might be a great entity to go and negotiate some of these.
Real quickly before we go to a break, people can take a tour of your distillery. Is there a website? Is there a place they can go to get information on how they can come
visit
you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. WatershedDistillery.com. Go to the website. There's a tours tab in the upper right-hand corner. You click on that. You can see our schedule. You can buy a tour. You can get it all set up, get your reservation done online.
That sounds great. Greg Lehman and Dave Rigo, the owners of Watershed Distillery here in this segment of All Sides with Ann Fisher. And we're going to take a little bit of a break on All Sides. You're listening to 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
On the next Fresh Air, Doris Day. There's a new CD-DVD set of her recordings and films. She's also the star of the month on TCM, and she's about to turn 88. Also, comic Aziz Ansari. He has a new online comedy special. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for April is the Ohio Historical Center. Enjoy 2-for-1 regular admission to either attraction, excluding special events. Become a basic $60 member and get your member card by going to WOSU.org right now. And thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, providing a disciplined approach to help individuals and small businesses grow and maintain their wealth. TheMontgomerySolution.com.
47 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly cloudy skies today, a high near 62. Clouds tonight, a low of 43 degrees. Clouds again for tomorrow. Along with those clouds, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 75. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Oh, in some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer.
Now this little song, it's more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer.
And that is the country singer Tom T. Hall with a medley of his hit, I think. it was one that I remembered, and I was actually kind of humming that tune on the way to the studios this morning. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I am Stu Nicholson, sitting in for Ann for the next couple of days. We're talking this morning about a new law that allows Ohio's growing microbrewery and microdistillery industry to offer samples of their beer and spirits on their premises without having to serve food in a restaurant-style setting, or be able to sell you a bottle of the product on-site rather than having to go to a liquor store, as we've been talking about for the past few minutes. Our guests that have been joining us are Dave Rigo and Greg Lehman of Watershed Distillers, and we are now also joined by Eric Bean, who is the president of the Ohio Craft Brewers Association and the owner of the Columbus Brewing Company. Having sampled some of that, I can attest that it is a very good brew. So, Eric, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
We talked with Greg and Dave a little bit about how they got started, you know, and how they really and how getting into the distillery business kind of came in from out of left field, so to speak. Harkening back to our first hour talking about baseball, I guess. How did you get started? What were you doing before you were a microbrewer?
I was in college studying biological anthropology, and one night at a party, some guys started talking about making their own beer, which was kind of, I didn't have any idea you could do that at home. That to me was a big science, big factory type of thing. And next morning I got up, went to the store, bought a book, and started making beer in our kitchen.
In the interest of scientific research, no doubt.
Well, definitely, yeah. And, I called my dad and told him, that's it, this is what I'm going to do. And he begged me to stay in college. He said, you're not going to regret that. Get your degree. Then you can go on to do whatever you want to do.
And did you?
Yeah, I finished. And I actually had all intentions to go to graduate school, except I was able to find a job the day I graduated, starting brewing, and that didn't stop.
So how does this new law impact you as a microbrewer? Right? I mean, it sounds like this is pretty much good news all around.
It definitely is. I think in a lot of ways was a much better, it had more impact on the distillers. I wouldn't say it's a better law for them, but on our end, what it allows the microbrewers to do is to, you come in, tour, and you can actually taste the product, much like theirs, because before, in a small microbrewery where there's no restaurant attached, there was no way to have to taste the product after the tour. Mm-hmm. Columbus Brewing Company is very unique in that we look like a brew pub, but we're not. The restaurant's a separate operation, mm-hmm. so we couldn't share those tours together. We still haven't figured out a way that we're going to be able to utilize this rule. But for the brewers of the state of Ohio, it's huge, especially for some of these very small startups. It's going to allow them, one, a small revenue source, but two, to actually get in front of consumers who can then kind of go out and be their salespeople. They can say, hey, I was at the brewery and I loved this beer. Why isn't it on tap here? Mm-hmm. And so, I think all around it's a great revenue source and a great marketing tool.
And in talking with Dave and Greg earlier, we talked about the local sources, where the grains come from, where the hops come from, things like that. Is that very much the case with you? How much of an Ohio connection is there between what you brew and who supplies you?
Well, I mean, to be honest, there's very little with Ohio agriculture. Malted barley is a big time commodity that's done. Most of our grains come from Canada, big regions of Germany. Ohio, it's the closeness to the malting plant. That's what stops us. What we use is malted barley. It has to go through a malting process. Mm-hmm. And so we don't use any barley from Ohio. We do use some hops that are grown in Ohio. Ohio used to be a major hop producer. That ended back before Prohibition. And now we've got some small farms that are starting to grow and allow us to make a couple beers a year using those fresh Ohio hops.
That was going to be my question. Do you see the law allowing this situation to change and maybe some more sources locally to come into the picture?
I think, all the brewers, you know, especially us, we're out looking for ways to keep our ties local. I mean, that's, you know, my focus at home is trying to make sure I'm supporting local farmers and, you know, supporting our local community, because they're the ones. We only sell beer in Columbus and a little bit in Cleveland. My paycheck is based upon local people paying for it, and I try and keep those dollars there. And we'd love to find more agricultural products. I just don't know where that, you know, what sources that will be from.
We've got Scott on the line from Hilliard. He's been holding for a little bit. And Scott, thank you very much, by the way, for hanging on the line here when we went through the break. And you've got a question that maybe we can address to Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, Eric, Columbus IPA is an absolute staple in my fridge. Love the beer. So just so you know,
thank you.
Good work on that. I think the new law is certainly a step in the right direction. But for us beer drinkers, a big regulation that we're concerned with is Ohio's ABV limit on beer. And if people don't know, you can't buy beer in Ohio over 12% ABV, which is alcohol by volume. But you can buy wines and spirits much, much higher than that. And I know there was a provision in the budget last year that may have, you know, allowed higher ABV beer to be brewed and sold in the state, but that was later taken out. And, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, where are we going in that process and what steps are we taking to try and make sure that that law, which in my opinion as a craft beer drinker is discriminatory towards beer, and hopefully lifting that regulation so that we can not only brew better beer in Ohio, but also get access to some of these beers from other states and around the country that we can't get in Ohio just because of that regulation.
Scott, thank you. Eric, what do you say to that?
It's a tricky one. I mean, I think as Director Goodman said earlier, anytime you're dealing with alcohol legislation, it's you got to tiptoe around it. And I think, you know, that's what we ran into last year with the higher alcohol. There was some state representatives who were very, very concerned about raising that bar that high. You know, it's less than 1% of the beers made in the world that reach above that level. And I know, you know, we ought to be giving access to the consumer who wants that. I don't think it would change anything we do in our brewery. We don't make anything over 10%, and I don't think we would. But I definitely think down the road we'll see that bill come up again. It's, you know, it's a barrier that is kind of arbitrary. It's not necessarily an important one, but why the number was chosen when it was, they were talking moving it to 18, and why 18? Everybody's nervous about making it too high. I mean, what we do as a craft producer, our goal is we're not selling beer by the case. We're not trying to sell 21-year-old kids beer. It's an expensive product. It's expensive for us to make. It's expensive for the consumer to purchase. What we're trying to offer is an experience. So limiting the alcohol, you're talking about a mature consumer, and I think that's where we need to find a good way, intelligent way to get the state representatives to understand we're not trying to get people drunker. We're just trying to give them an opportunity to taste a different type of product.
And that's really a good point, because you know, as is the case with Dave and Greg here too, you're not trying to compete with the big boys. You're not trying to open up a, you know, a huge brewery up in the north side of Columbus, a la, you know, Anheuser-Busch. But really, you know, the whole aspect of this is that it's a handcrafted brew.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely, it's, you know, what the big guys do, they do it really well. But what they're trying to do is appeal to a large mass of people. We make some beers that a lot of people don't like. I mean, we go to tasting events and I see it look in their eyes when they taste it. And, you know, I don't know, somewhere in me kind of smirks thinking, you know, we did it. We got another beer some people don't like. But that's not who we made it for. We make it for a specific audience who absolutely loves it. You know, I mean, IPAs, like he called in and said, you know, he loves it. Not everybody does. Some people find that level of bitterness offensive.
That just reminded me of my wife and I going out one night to a party at a local establishment, and she tried a bottle of an IPA, the name of which escapes me right now. But I only see this face. She hates coffee. And if I give her something with coffee in it, she makes what I call the coffee face. Well, she made the coffee face on steroids when she tried this IPA. But it, so you're right. It is a very, it's a very different taste. It's something that you kind of want to try and decide for yourself if you like it or not. But actually, when you think about it, this is kind of what the law is about, is being able to have that experience.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what these laws, it's what we're trying to remove barriers for the consumer to get access to these products and decide what they want. The old mentality, I think, is kind of the generic mentality that all the products are the same and it comes down to marketing. And a big differentiator for craft product is the product itself. And, you know, we do 7 different beers at any given time. We don't make, you know, you're not supposed to like all of them. You're supposed to pick the ones you like. And we have variables in there so you can pick which ones you like. And they all sell well. You know, if we don't sell beer anymore, it's because it wasn't selling well. We didn't find the right audience and we moved on to the next product.
How big of an aspect is and we had talked a little bit about this with Director Goodman from the Department of Commerce earlier. How big of an aspect is brewery and distillery tourism?
I think it's huge. I mean, our facility right now is limiting, but we plan on building a new brewery in the near future that will be, you know, I see the opportunity for a major tourism destination. I've heard stories, and I don't know if it's true, but I've heard that Great Lakes is Cleveland's number one tourist attraction, mm-hmm. greater than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now, somebody can call in and tell me I'm wrong, but I think just the fact that somebody puts that sentence together says that it's a very large piece of the puzzle for Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could conceivably see this becoming, kind of the Ohio micro distillery trail or the Ohio microbrewery trail. Much as you'd see, there's a good friend of mine that's an avid golfer, and they have the Robert Trent Jones, you know, trail down through Mississippi of all these different golf courses that he designed. So you could almost see that happening here. Greg, Dave, if you want to chime in on this, you're kind of nodding your heads, and you seem to agree.
Yeah, we feel like on the touring side, we've only seen the tip of the iceberg. We haven't pushed it hard because we haven't been able to capitalize on the sales before. But we've been spending a lot of time in the last week or so really sitting down and trying to figure out how we bring more people in the distillery, how we get the word out about tours.
Director Goodman talked a little bit about job creation. And you can all kind of chime in on this as you, but do you see this growing in enough that there's going to be new hiring, there's going to be new jobs coming up, and how big or small, how do you see that happening?
I think, you know, on our end, we've seen tremendous growth over the last 3 years. I mean, I think we won't double our staff this year, but in the last 2 years, we probably have. Now, it tells you how small a staff we started with, but, you know, we're going to add probably 2 or 3 full-time jobs this year, you know, and these aren't just entry-level jobs. These are skilled jobs that we're hiring college graduates with, and you know, I think it's an important part of what we do. You know, we pay people well. I hope none of the guys are listening right now because they're laughing, but I think we pay them well. And what we do is we provide tax back into the city when we get tax incentives to do things. Those go to pay to hire new employees and allow us to, you know, to continue to grow our business, and for those tax dollars, their wages go back in to support other things in the community.
What kind of new things have you got coming up? What's the next best thing in coming up, I guess, in terms of what's coming out of microbreweries?
I think for us right now, it's capacity. We are going to be doubling our capacity in the next 60 days. We put in a new packaging line. We're going to start date coding. And these are things that, as we grow, allows us to control our product even better, keep things fresher. In terms of new product, until those tanks go in, you know, there's some secret. We've got some products that people are asking for, which is a nice thing. When you get emails on a daily basis asking when a certain beer is going to start getting bottled, mm-hmm. we know we're on to something. And Bodie, which is our double IPA, will see a bottle this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting a date on it. I've learned in the past that as soon as I put a date on it and I don't deliver, I get a lot of grief.
Build up the anticipation. That's a good marketing aspect. How about on the distillery end? I hear that you're actually looking at a barrel whiskey.
Yeah, there's actually a couple new products coming out this year, and like Eric said, I don't know if we should put a date on it or not, but we actually have a really interesting product that should be out sometime this summer. It's actually a bourbon barrel aged gin, which kind of sounds a little bit weird, something that we put in a barrel about a year ago, and it came out pretty nice. So we're just waiting for all the label approval from the federal government to come through, and then that should be on the market. And then we have a bourbon that will be out hopefully later this year also. November, December time period is what we're shooting for, but we're not going to put it on the market until it's ready. So pretty interesting.
You'll sell no whiskey before it's time.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was in a store last night and I see some synergies here. I guess there's actually a brand and I think it's an ale called a bourbon barrel ale. So do you see you guys cooperating at some point? And maybe
Eric here in the last couple of weeks. Just we honestly, unfortunately, I think we're both so busy here recently. We haven't gotten to know each other until this bill kind of connected us, and we're already talking about shipping some of our bourbon barrels over there and possibly doing some collaboration. So we'd love to. Hopefully, Eric would love to too. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I we're definitely interested. I think, you know, we've played a little bit with the bourbon barrels, and you know, it's just another flavor contributor, because I think that's, you know, it's the bourbon barrels aren't used to increase the alcohol content of the beer; it's to pick up the flavors. You know, it's kind of and these guys can speak much more intelligently about this than me. But you know, the reason it's aged in barrels for flavor, it's that you pick up that toasted oak flavor. And what we found when we put beer in it, you get vanilla and coconut, and you get some more. And after the booze has been in there, it's kind of softens the flavor. So we get just the nuances, and it really is a huge flavor contributor. And it gives it, you know, you can put the kind of beer in front of somebody who says they hate beer, and all of a sudden, you know, their eyes light up and they go, wait a second, I just didn't like the beer I'd tried. It's not that I don't like beer.
Yeah. I had exactly that experience trying that. But I think it's called Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Beer. Yeah. So hopefully maybe we'll see an Ohio Bourbon Barrel Beer.
We'll leave out the word Kentucky this time.
Yeah. Might be interesting to see if we, again, as I said earlier, if we'd had Kentucky University and OSU in the NCAA championship. But maybe someday, maybe we'll have a championship of bourbon and beer that we can hold over Kentucky's head at some point. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher. We've been talking about a change in the state law that allows microbreweries and micro distilleries to be able to sell their bottled product or taste samples of their product at the source where they get. And Eric, I would be remiss if I didn't. Where can people go to get in touch with the CBC?
ColumbusBrewing.com, or they can generally hit every grocery store in town and find our products.
But people can come take a tour, take a look at some point. So
yeah, hopefully we'll have that down the road.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at wosu.org. 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.